We'll give it a couple minutes here, just letting people pull up, so. There it is. Oh. I'm sure we're
three, four,
one more. I just heard earlier he was working for me.
Paul Van Dyke? Yep. Go ahead, yep. We have a quorum, so that's good. Just comments for me. Don't really have much, but want to thank everybody for getting together. Kind of short notice. Part of that is Luke here is gracious enough to come down. We'll get to that in a minute to talk a little bit about the bison project, this is kind of one of the old days, it's not like important and real business, so. Anyway, yeah, no, thanks for coming down. I know there's a lot of chatter back and forth from the treasury and people interested, but, you know, we're kind of threw this one together last minute to make it. But, big public comments right now, but we got there's a dead bison, so. And how about for any AC members? Comments or concerns, anything you want to bring up?
What's extra points for when we apply for bison?
Ask him.
For being here?
I mean.
Any other comments from anybody? Yes, Alex.
Thankfully, I still do not have the minutes not being typed up. But, still have them written down. Now I see why Eric brings his.
Oh, don't worry, we have a logging set up out back.
I intend to get it.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that I think we can kind of keep next once you do get it up. Already covered that proposal we started that back into the kind of tracker. Alright, nothing else. Approval of minutes from the last few meetings. If you don't already have a copy of your own. They have been. Oh, let me get the meeting minutes with Alex. We can add it up. We can approve them. Approval of the agenda. Everybody can copy your agenda if there's anything anybody wants to. No? Okay. Old business. Anybody have any old business they'd like to bring up? Yeah, there is on the agenda later on about the proposal for the interior. I guess one thing is I have been still in contact a little bit with figures from the borough and confirmation that the funding was there for the program. Well, the buddy that she talked about before, she got word that what the study would be. Hopefully that keeps going. She was hoping to make it tonight after ran it through. Hopefully next meeting we can. Alright, well, we'll move on then. Well, we got Duke Rogers here from BFG. If you want to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about this bison project, we're all pretty interested.
Well, appreciate you all having me here tonight. My name is Duke Rogers.
little bit of background on me. Introduce myself. I'm raised in Fairbanks. Grew up there. My dad worked on this project, the recycling project, before me, so I've been familiar with it since I was a kid. I spent some time down here in the age growing up. You know, I used to like rafting through the Media Canyon nearby. I just hung on some of the ranges going into canyons. And now, as I get older, I'm also getting things like hunting and things like that and fishing. So, spending time around this area, so it's been really. So, I work with the Woodlice and Restoration Project now as the assistant biologist with Tom Seaton. You guys may or may not have met him, but he's the lead biologist on the project. So, kind of what I'm here for tonight is really two things. One is to inform you all and update you all on our current woodbison herd we have. I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with woodbison. How much do you guys know that? Are you pretty familiar with it? Or? A little here and there. And then also let you know about our newest efforts, which include potential woodbison restoration nearby here in what we're calling the Lower Panama River area. We had invited your AC to last week's meeting, but understandably it was during the week, and you gentlemen all work jobs, so that can be hard to make happen. So I'm here to relate the information. So first of all, I'll give you a little bit of background on the project, and that is that Bob Stevenson, who was a biologist for Alaska Fishing Game in the Yukon Flats area, he in the 90s and 80s, when he was doing his research out there and working out there, he would often come across bison skulls on the river drainages that had been. So he realized that there was a lot of bison present in Alaska at one point and started to ask around, realizing that there was maybe a whole history about them being there relatively recently. So the research, it seems like the last bison were seen in Alaska about 1915 near Panama Village. So they weren't here that long ago, and historically, 1915. More than that long ago that wood bison were in Alaska, and historically they were probably a major part of the landscape here. So after doing an initial scoping process, which we got lots of public input from Alaskans, that this should be something that Fish and Game should pursue, wood bison restoration areas where they once roamed. Essentially what that is everything in the interior of Alaska, so south of the Brooks Range and north of the Alaska Range, in the Alaska-Canada border, down the Yukon and Panama ranges to essentially. That's kind of the area that we're looking at. And what we initially looked at as the three main spots for wood bison restoration were the Yukon Flats, the Minto Flats, and the Imoco Flats. And out of those three areas, based primarily on the level of support at the time from all interest groups, we went with the Imoco Flats and established a population there in 2015. That was started with about 130 animals, and most recently, we added another 28 animals, so that with the numbers dropping from the initial release and then rebounding and having kind of some good and bad years, which I can get into more detail on if you'd like, but the population right now is at about 150 animals. So it's starting out slowly, but there is good potential for growth in the area. And we see that the habitat is very suitable for bison. It appears that the winter there, because they have a bit more extreme over Yukon Drainage. For example, the last day, they just had like an inch of freezing rain there. Versus here in the interior, we tend to have more predictable, dry, and less snow in the winter here. So that would be more desirable for bison, and now we're looking to new areas where bison could be restored. As I said previously, Minto Flat was an area that was identified. We're kind of expanding that general range that we're looking at from around Indiana Village down to Panama Village. So not specifically Minto Flats, but that is an area that we are licensed through at least the processes that you need to go through the government to put like. So what we most recently did was held our first meeting to bring in all the interest groups. So the way we are told by the government to gather these meetings would be to have local hunting groups, such as yourself, the AC, other groups like Safari Club International, Wild Sheep Foundation are represented, all of the local tribal councils and corporations that are near where the bison could be released, as well as all federal government or state government agencies. All that fun. That's what you are a part of. And they convened last week to talk about this. So in total we had 31 interest groups show up, and there were 40 total invited, and 9 did not attend the meeting. They met for 3 days for the first meeting, where we were just talking about the lower Cantaloupe bison planning team area. This is just an introductory meeting to get everyone up to speed on the bison. And we spent 3 days primarily asking and answering questions and providing lots of information on the history and the biology of the project. But we also talked about a couple things here, and I'll list them off. The team works towards, the team being the planting team, works towards understanding and addressing the key issues facing wood bison and their management in the lower Chenault area. Discussion among the interest groups. The team worked at increasing trust between all user groups. The team spent considerable time asking questions about and listening to presentations about the history of bison in Alaska and performance of bison that are currently in Alaska. The team spent some time exploring harvest allocation. The team spent some time discussing the accessibility of bison as a resource after release. The team looked at habitat and land ownership in the region and how that might affect harvest and access. And the team wrote about vision of what they would like to see in the lower Chenanah River area in 30 years starting. And lastly, the team talked about obstacles to achieving this. Note here that our facilitator, Alistair Bass, at that meeting, he kept diligent notes on the meeting and then started writing up a summary of that, which we're going to distribute in the next week or two to all planning team members, including. I'll give you a bit more detail because I know I just spoke very generally about the concept. But to be honest, because it was an introductory meeting, it was very general, and we didn't get down to any one topic to very great detail because there's a lot of time just catching people up to speed. So yeah, we have that meeting, and I'd be happy to answer your questions on that meeting or bison in general. At the moment, what we're looking for this area, being the lower river area, is to meet with each group individually and relay this information. So you're kind of the first ones in this group, probably 15 to 20 more at least meeting with these groups to relay this information. But yeah, and I also have some stickers I'd like to share if you guys want. It's just a wood bison with the Alaska flag on it and some information cards. Just go to our fishing game website, and we have a Facebook page where we post pictures. If I go all the way down here, I might as well bring the hide and the skull of the animal so you can see what it looks like in all its glory. It's a big animal, and you can tell it's well over, flapping over the table there.
Where did that one come from?
This one here is an old bull from one of our captive populations. We have some. Originally, they started in Anchorage at the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center, and we just most recently started using the large animal research data and surveys to hold some of the yearlings we're getting right now.
Okay. Questions?
There's no way we're talking about going straight.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say we don't know for sure, but I think that a combination of changing climate at the time when they started to disappear and the introduction of modern techniques and firearms were contributing to that. I believe that humans played a part in it and
partners.
give an estimated population at the time? Or like what do they figured like?
Historically?
Yeah, like 1850s probably time frame. What did they figure they had for?
The 1850s was probably pretty scarce by that time. To give you kind of an idea of how it adjusted. Alaska previously was a large, long step grassland and transitioned into a supportive ecosystem. There was vast expanses of grassland that supported hundreds of thousands of wood bison, is the estimate. Somewhere in the realm of 300,000 to 400,000 is what I believe Bob Stevenson used, but you know, that's true. Anyways, once it started to turn into this boreal ecosystem, which is some of these small wetland grass meadows like we see in Minso or we see in the Milk Gorge and Helms Flats, then the population was probably quite a bit smaller at that time, but you would certainly be able to support hundreds or thousands in some of those meadows. Not as much of an expansive bison population throughout interior Alaska at this point.
Do they still have a huntable population in Northwest Territories?
Northwest Territories, yeah.
I've read a book about some guys that spent the winter there in the 30s. And there's still a huntable population.
Yep, that's actually, for wood bison, that's some of the largest free roaming wild wood bison populations. The other one being, the Asia herd, which is right across the border from us near, Haines Junction in Kluane Lake. They have a population of wood bison that they started about 30 years ago with only a couple dozen bison, I believe it was. Maybe it was as much as 100. But now they're, pushing 2,000 in about 30 years and having more harvest than they know what to deal with. Of course, that's the Asiac and appears in a different area, but there are some similar characteristics and some different characteristics. So it could be feasible that they could do well like that, or they could struggle like they do down in the Anoko. With the weather here in the winter being generally more mild, I think it would be more favorable for them.
That population that you mentioned,
yeah.
How many of them have perished and how many of them fed in that time?
So the population they have here?
Yeah, and then you put that out of 2015?
Yeah,
8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How population aged? And I mean, yeah, how old were they putting them out there? How many of them are still around? How many of them are born in the wild now?
Good question. So when we released them, we released all 80 sex classes and that original 130 animals. And at the moment, the current age structure is with the introduction of 28 more yearlings this year and good reproduction survival of calves and yearlings over the past couple of years, there's a very young group cohort of bison that are about to reach breeding age. So it has a fairly large young population in it, but it still has a very large group of old bulls because everyone can survive rough winter conditions easily and out as well.
What's the lifespan on a wild bison?
So, yeah, I'd say for bulls, they generally don't make it past 15 for a while. That'd be pretty special for a bull. And even in captivity, that can be, they go down. Cows maybe a little bit longer, but you wouldn't generally see them past the age of 20 for a while either.
Breeding age, is that 5 years for them to start breeding, or?
For a cow, they generally give offspring when they turn 3 would be their first calf. And then from there until they reach about 15, they would have a calf 2 out of every 3 years. Take one off here.
The more mortality from predation or from starvation at this point?
So starvation is where they have some difficulties in that late winter and the Anoko area. Thick layers of ice that layer on top of each other with snow, and that kind of locks up their vegetation there. There's plenty of vegetation, it's just full of vegetation, but these ice layers there, when these erratic winters they've had. That's not every winter is like that. They've had good years where they've had really good survival and really good reproduction, but then they've also had bad years where they've had fairly bad survival and reproduction. So it's kind of a blooming bust, you could say.
The 150 stay together for the most part, or they break up in smaller groups?
They break up and come back together just like on a daily basis or a weekly basis. But they all stay within about 3 square miles of each other and migrate at all. They have kind of identified a summer and winter range of about 30 miles. So they recognize that there's kind of a snow shadow in the southern part of their range, and the snow's not as deep there. And so they go there in the winter and up in the northern part of their range for the summer breeding. So
any outliers that just like taking off and going crazy?
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned that, these three that I'm going to explain all were like relatively quickly after the release. So it's not one we've had since the first year or so since they were. But it was one that went all the way down to Quinnahawk and kind of like down by the coast before it was eventually poached illegally. It sounded like it was a gentleman out there. But anyway, that was one of them. Another one had gone down the Yukon, kind of towards like Russian Mission. And a third one went all the way up to Brooks Range and ended up flying there in the first winter there. Which the Brooks Range from the Anoka is a very long way. There's hundreds and hundreds of miles from go that far up. And all the way into the foothills of the Brooks Range. And he started to make his way back down south, it looked like, from the GPS collars, but he got caught in the winter there. There is one cow right now that's hanging out kind of near Cowtag, which is a couple, I think, maybe 100 or 200 miles north of the main herd. But other than that, the rest of them are all really in that 30-mile core range.
What kind of population target are you guys looking at? At lower Anoka herd?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, what it really comes down to is the planning team to decide those kinds of things, what they want for a population objective. What I can say for this is we did an environmental assessment on the Minto Flat State Game Refuge, just the northern portion that's north of the Tanana River there, there's a southern. In that one area, they determined that 500 to 1,000 bison could be sustained there relatively easily. So it could be larger than that, potentially. You know, again, this is still somewhat of an experiment, and we aren't 100% sure how bison are going to do, but we can look at other examples and see if they're doing really well, and some of the teams like in this lower Tanana River area that they would do pretty well.
Do you expect those? If your herd reaches 1,000, would you expect them to split up and move out further, range further out, just for food sources and such?
You can expect that. I think in bison society, when they kind of reach their carrying capacity for an environment, whatever that means, they tend to have these kind of exploratory forays where some individual, generally young bulls and cows, will leave the herd and go explore new territory. And come back sometimes and take others from your group and establish new populations. So that is totally possible for sure if the population gets to them.
Why did you guys choose that particular area? Like, it even seems like the lower Anoka area, like, and the Anoka River area is very similar to that Mental Flats area where it's real wet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of just marshland.
Yep.
I mind, I guess I just don't consider the place to do as well there as, you know, out of the river there, you know, the whole section. I'm just curious why you guys, because of those, because of the food source, or they do better in the wet climate, or?
Well, it's kind of funny, they're called wood bison, but really, if I were to name them, I'd call them swamp bison because they tend to hang out in the swamp all the time. And the reason for that is because those low-lying areas that get flooded are the ones that can't establish forest. Instead, they have these grass and sedge meadows, and that's what bison prefer to graze on. But really, that is the reason why they hang out in these low-lying swamps. So you wouldn't really expect to see bison when you're thinking of bison on the Great Plains down the way. They're slightly different in that way. But I think you were pointing to something which is a good point, and that is that spot 20 south or it's 28 south of the Paramount River there, seems to be kind of grassy, but also not right down there in the lowest lying. So that could be a favorable habitat for bison out there. Something you have to consider is that the new ag project just sold some land adjacent to that. That was part of the
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Initially, I'm trying to remember back quite a few years now. Initially, there was some pushback from some groups to try to prevent you from putting bison out in some of these areas. I know where you wanted to go, and I seemed like somebody was thinking that there was oil or gas or something involved in these areas, and they were thinking if we put these bison out there, then we're not going to be able to.
Yeah, I heard about that. They were thinking that they were put the bison there, and then they could be like a threat for everyone who speaks on the land, and then they could find oil or gas. Yeah. Everything you're saying is correct, and that was part of the reason why bison went into Yanoko originally, is getting the effect on that. The company they're thinking of is Doyon, the regional native corporation. They have land and subsurface rights in both the Minto area and the Yukon Flats area. But they don't really have much exploration going on in the Inoko Flat. So their perceived fear of bison hindering their resource development was one of the reasons why we got this special 10-day rule, which designates wood bison at the federal level in Alaska as a non-essential experimental operation. So permission to name it. What that does is it gives us in really strong ironclad kind of writing that bison are not going to be a problem for resource development. If they become a problem for resource development, we can remove them from the landscape. So that, as a federal ruling that was made up for the wood bison population, kind of made it solidified that you should not have wood bison disrupt resource development. After the resource development state, we wouldn't want to. But since then, I think some of those fears are subsiding a little bit. We're still working with Doyon to address those for them, but they're eager to hear from the other interest groups about wood bison and not immediately, of course.
And the interaction between the bison and other species in the area, like moose or predation by bears and wolves and stuff like that in the area, so is there How's that balancing that out?
I think you asked about predation earlier, and I forgot to thank you for that too, but there have been, I think, 3 cases of predation on the wood bison since they were established. Those 3 instances came in some of these really harsh winters that I was telling you about, where it was really deep snow with really thick ice layers. And so a wood bison is fighting through feet of rough snow terrain versus these wolves can float on top of that and really get a pretty big advantage over them. Even so, when we flew over these mortalities, predation events, it was like 2-mile battlefield that you could see there of these young bison really not letting it happen. So generally, if the conditions are equal, the wood bison will fight off any predation. Only when they're really disadvantaged from sickness or really poor winter conditions that predators really have a chance. As far as we can tell so far, you know, maybe they'll learn to do better, but it seems to be that way in other healthy populations across North America. As far as interacting with other animals and moose, I've seen wood bison and moose on the same landscape. It's really high density moose out there in the Inoko. And in the same spots I've been planning to pick up bison species for some diet analyses we're doing right on the meadow across a couple moose hanging out in that same area. So really, I don't think as far as direct interactions, they hardly do it at all. Like, it's not like one's fighting for territory over the other. And when it comes to their browse and their diet, like I said, browse, moose are browsers, and they'll eat the tens of willows and fruits like that. The bison are eating the low-lying grass and sedge, aquatic grass. You know, they might eat no a willow or something like that. And you see there's some small overlap there, but it's a very small portion of their annual bias is overlap. So I think really they couldn't coexist, and they see that in places where we've had bison in Alaska and moose at the same time, like Delta Junction. We've got a very strong, healthy plains bison population there, and pretty good moose hunting, it seems like, for the interior region. The same goes for like Harewell near McGrath. They've got a shaped productive bison herd there and really good moose hunting at the same time. So they're not really competing species, is how we view it at least.
So if populations from the plains bison that we have happen to mix, you know, if the herds grow and tend to mix them, will they interbreed and I know they're the same species, but there is a little bit of difference, isn't there? Have you thought about that? Or?
Mm-hmm. So for that one, you're correct. That wood and plain are both American bison, so they're the same species or different subspecies. So biologically, there is no problem for them interbreeding at all. It would be not a problem for either species if you both can make live an offspring. Politically, it is more of who wants to keep them separate. A little bit of background on that. Wood bison were almost thought to be completely extinct and take away because they had been mixed with plains bison. The last few remaining wood bison in Canada early 1900s. Once they found that there were pure wood bison, at least pure in their mind wood bison, they didn't want to make that mistake again. And wood bison do have a northern range versus plains bison, have a southern range in the lower 48. And so there's merit in that there are differences among them. And maybe they haven't become different species yet, but they could become different species if they're given enough time. So all again is to wrap that up just to say that biologically, no problem with human mixing. Politically, it's kind of the deal right now, and there would most certainly be measures taken to keep.
You kind of want to keep them separate, or maintain the distinct instead of losing that, and that would be a problem.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Those distinct features are one of the reasons you want to keep them separate.
Yeah.
Just to play devil's advocate real quick for you. The genetic diversity in both plains and wood bison is very low because they came from, at one point, 10 or only hundreds of animals, you know? So, essentially for the benefit of the genetics, you could mix them together. I'm not saying that's what we want to do politically, it's not the case. But just trying to lay out that, I see your point in keeping them as different species or putting them together, there's reasons for both.
What are some of the prime arguments against breeding? Doesn't want to do this.
That's a good question. I agree with you. Yeah. I totally want to. But there are actually very valid reasons why some folks aren't on board with it 100%. I already mentioned one, which was worries over resource development. You know, we've addressed that with federal legislation or federal rulings, but related to something like that. Another one I've heard is when brought up a moose and bison conflict, some people perceive that they're not compatible on the landscape together. That's one that we think that with education could be resolved, but people have the right to their opinion. Blueberry is another one that some folks are worried about is conflicting.
You can get a blueberry bison.
This sounds great. Bison trampling all the blueberries. Yeah. Specifically in the Minto Flats area, there's a lot of blueberry shipping out there, and some folks are worried that bison will hold their blueberry patches. Which again, we don't believe is really the case.
They don't eat them.
They don't eat them, it's not really part of their diet. So bison might walk through a blueberry patch, but they're not going to sample a whole patch for someone else not to. We use trail systems a lot, so they kind of do a lot of single file things. So you're not going to have, generally, unless it's like a full group of bison go right through an area and step on every single bush. They're going to just walk through on the trail. But it's understandable. There's a lot of people that really depend on blueberries, and it's a big part. Another reasonable one. Some other things that are important to some groups are things like harvest allocation and land access for harvest. Those are other ones that people have concerns over, but that's part of the reason why we have these meetings that we do, the planning meetings, is to gather all these interest groups together and share their concerns and see if there's a way to resolve it, with advice on the landscape order.
So, meetings you had there last week,
mm-hmm.
How did that look as far as like harvest allocation amongst the you had SCI there,
mm-hmm.
Wild Sheep Foundation.
Yeah.
Sure. What was the kind of takeaway, I guess, on that? I'm curious.
Okay. So what I can say about that is we talked about it for like 2 hours at the very end of the third day. So all the conversations that were had were very brief and retired from the meeting, I think. But what was pretty much discussed were two topics, essentially hunting for all groups and hunting for specific groups. That makes sense to you, like an opportunity for all to hunt, anyone that would like to hunt, and a specific opportunity for local communities to hunt was brought up as a topic. Nothing was agreed on or really discussed at length, but those were just two of the ideas that were brought up. Or at teacher meetings, if you guys have a specific point of view. Well, that's maybe one thing the AC could determine.
Do you have a population number before you would commit to an allocation where you would have a few of those available?
That is another thing that's determined by the planning team that you are a part of as an AC. They get to determine how many bison they'd like to have out there, where they'd like to put them, how they would be hunted. All of those different things are determined.
Okay, I'll reword my question.
Okay.
As a biologist, what would you say was a sound number, considering the numbers you have placed upon them? Sound number to that. Sustain theirself, be able to take, say, 5%.
Yeah, I mean, a number in which companies have that.
Do you, as a biologist, do you think there is a number of buffalo that you need there, or bison that you need there, that they are going to be able to sustain their population and still have growth? If somebody's there taking, as you've already said, pretty much predation is non-existent. So we are predation. So with us as predation, say the number would have to be that they would be able to sustain their population and grow. Help them.
Alright, so I'm going to have to make some assumptions to give you that number. But let's just say a good, healthy, wood bison population could have a growth of about 20% per year. A premium population, but we see something kind of like that in adult consumption herd. But 20% is what we say if we're looking for that. When we get to that number of 20%, we're going to harvest, let's say, 10 animals out of that herd when we reach 20%. And what would the population be? We would want to have 20%. So that would be like 200 animals, would be 40 animals growth every year. If you're wanting to grow or harvest 10 bison, that would allow you to grow 30 bison per year. That makes sense, those numbers to you there? If you have a population of 200 with 20% growth, that'd be 40 animals added to the population each year. You could harvest 10 of those and still have a growth of 30 animals.
Now, for harvesting those animals, would it be better to strictly stick with bulls harvest, or would it be better to shoot the old bulls and leave the young? Just trying to figure out here where we would want to go.
Like, yeah.
What would this look like if we were going to start doing a harvest? Where are we heading?
Yeah. So for the Anoko, for example, the old bulls out there are all doing great, and there's a large population of bulls. So that would be probably an encouragement to hunt the older bulls. Some of them are at the end of their breeding, and some of them have already passed their breeding time. So essentially, they're not contributing to the population. Yeah, I think in that kind of scenario, we found that, for example, in the lower Shannon, we probably steer hunters for younger animals that could reproduce a lot longer. I'm not going to say that's for sure the case, but just kind of using your logic there, that would seem reasonable and something we just...
There's a pretty good playbook already. I mean, if I can put three people in there, I'll put three classes. It would be a whole lot different than inviting. Getting harvested. And it would be a whole lot different than feral or otherwise would it.
I think you're right there. If it's on equally good landscape, then they should perform similarly, just as both being American bison. But the trick is the things that we don't realize when we put bison out there. You know, put a lot of research into doing something like this beforehand, but you don't predict things like erratic winters, very commonly on the lower Anoko versus mountain interior. So those weather changes, even though the Anoko landscape is just as healthy and productive as anything we have here in the interior for Delta or the Fairwell herds, they've got different winter weather conditions, which are, you never know, maybe there's something in Minto that we don't know about right now that we would learn later on that would make them even more productive than they ever thought or less productive. So that's why it is important to just mention a little bit. It's an experiment. We will learn how well they can reproduce. As far as we know right now, it does seem like they would have a pretty promising The fun part. That's the fun part. Depends on where the planning team wants us to put them. But, for example, let's just say Minto Glasses, that's somewhere where we are allowed to put them right. You could barge them along the Panama and then build the alleyway off the river into the Minto Glasses Game Refuge. Oh, I should say that in any of these situations, we could do what's called a soft release, where we build a temporary pen to hold the bison in, and that way they can become accustomed to the environment and kind of anchored in that area. Especially if they were to get calves in that spot in the spring, they would kind of consider that their home range is fine. It's not a guarantee, but they tend to stay a lot closer to that area. So we could set up a soft release pen via a barge on the Panama. We could set one up driving out to Elliott to Minto, if, say, for example, Minto or Manly wanted to work with us to house bison on corporation land near the community and then release them off of there. That's an option. The Anoko, we might have to do this here because it's close by, but we even got an AC-130 military jet to fly bison out to the Anoko. That's probably not going to be required for this area because we have more access, thankfully. So yeah, barging and trucking are kind of the two main options you have. You could even snow machine them out potentially, like out of Indiana, into the 20 feet. Yeah. So there's a lot of options. It depends on where people want them and how many and when it's going to happen.
The native land, oh.
Yeah.
It just seems that it would put some user group if they were hit properly.
Yeah, So the Minto Flats area and the majority, I'll say, of this lower Tanana River area is state lands by a large margin. There is some native land and a very small amount of federal land. But the majority would be on state lands, especially like the whole Minto Flats state gate refuge. What we see is being one of the places they would thrive in the area right now. There's been both good and bad concerns and optimistic ideas brought up as far as involving native corporations in their lands. Opportunities, like I mentioned, if a corporation wanted to work together to use their land as kind of a soft release spot where bison would be released from there. Also concerns about trespass on private lands and stuff like that for non-shareholders. There's a mix of things to talk about, but yeah, it's certainly something that has been discussed and should be discussed more as we...
Okay, so is this official? It's happening already?
This is essentially what we did last week was the very first meeting to discuss the possibility of it. And overall, it was very positive, and there was a lot of support in the group, but it was not fully represented, and it was only one representative for me. That's why kind of our next step was to see how broad the support is in each of these organizations, like we're trying to do here today. And then bring the group together again, if they'd like to actually start talking about the planning of them.
So if it went off without a hitch, what's the earliest that there's on the landscape?
Okay. So, to answer that for you, there's a lot of different possibilities, but if you're talking about the absolute earliest,
yeah.
We have between our fair-based population and our anchorage population about 30 animals of all age classes eligible for release whenever. We also have authority to put with bison in the Minto Flats State Game Refuge. All we need to have in place is a management plan. But I was talking about this team, the planning team that starts to develop. So all we need to put bison on the landscape is a management plan. Say that is an easy thing, if not necessarily the case, because there's a lot of groups, there are a lot of concerns that we see. For the example of the Anoko herd, it took three-day meetings once they knew they wanted to make a plan. So that would not be including this meeting that just had, It would be about 9-10 days of meetings about all of the aspects of this. Just as an example, it could be more, it could be less to reach that final mission.
Put them out there pregnant.
Good.
You did
before and you're in the Anoko.
Yeah. So, spring of 24.
Possibility. Right. We are also getting a new shipment of bison from Canada in the spring of 2020. I hadn't mentioned to you guys yet in the call. I have an agreement with the source population, which is in Canada, to get their surplus animals every other year. So we got 40 yearlings this half spring, and we're going to get somewhere in the realm of 30 to 50 yearlings next spring, and then two springs after that, after that again for our contract with them. We have about 100 bison potentially still coming into the state.
Do you guys, as like the bison team, have like a backup plan in case Minto's a bust? Where you're like, well, if these guys don't want them,
So we are having meetings in two other areas. So next week we're going to meet in Polk for the upper Tanana River Drainage, which is everything from Polk to the Alaska-Canada border. Similarly, the introductory meeting gather includes asking them what their questions and concerns are, see what the level of support is. We're also going to do the same for the Yukon. And if none of those places are receptive to wood bison anytime soon, then we might go back and put in that backyard first. And we can put the rest out with the Anoko herd for that one. There's no problem in that at all, but we just would like to have more population than one large herd.
potentially have?
Yep, so we have 30 bison that are eligible for release right now. We could put 15 in one spot, 15 in another, and next shipment put more in another spot, and go from that small number, instead of starting with 130 or something, start with 15 or 20 or something, and you can add population.
Do you have a target minimum for, like, genetic diversity for a starter group?
I think somewhere in the realm of 15 to 30 would be a good minimum number to start with. Genetically, you are shooting for 400 or more, and 1,000 or more is even better. So long-term genetic diversity in health.
But
we could use small population.
This is the long-term goal, I guess, of all this. No, I mean, looking 30, 40 years down the line, is the plan to slowly start introducing these to a number of areas throughout Alaska and really try to fully reestablish them like they were at one point in time? Is that the kind of end goal?
I think to a degree, yeah, you're correct, and that's kind of what we've been instructed as government agents to do in Fish and Game. The public, through this public planning process, has asked us to pursue restoration of bison. I don't know if we'll ever really be able to support hundreds of thousands like we did at one point. Definitely room in our ecosystem in interior Alaska to support thousands, if not tens of thousands of bison. It all depends on what the people want, and we'll make it happen. So we're asking right now, essentially, the people what they want, and they want to put bison in certain areas. So from there, but our mission is to restore wood bison to portions of their former range in interior Alaska. In the most recent meeting, they kind of did a 30-year vision of what wood bison is, and there's funny pictures of everyone that's in the group there. It's kind of an activity. Essentially, every group drew that they wanted to have bison throughout Alaska as a resource for everyone. The planning team that was present at this last meeting essentially wants that to be the case. That's some evidence point towards that as to be the case.
Yeah,
and they have a wood bison turn up. Well, not wood bison, but plenty of bison turn up there as well.
So I've done a farewell several times, and those bison that seem to, they were the foothills, the wind blowing on the river as well, but
wood bison and the Anoko typically are hanging out in the swamps. There are some foothills that are like covered in these kind of little black spruce sprigs just to the east of their main range. And they do go into that sometimes, but not very much. And they don't hang out there for that. You seem to prefer just a little low-end, but I just need enough. But the Ajax herd on the other side of the border from Alaska here, they like to hang out in these upland meadows all the time, and that's their main area. And that even is really what was expected of them at the time when they were released. So it differs, you know, and every bison herd adapts to their environment in their own way. The Anoko bison swim across the Yukon River. And the source population where they came from, they've never seen them swim across anything, hardly. So every new environment and new animals and new ideas seems to bring out different pieces of the habitat.
Nature will find a way.
There you go. That's good.
All right, well, we're coming up.
Hey, I have can you guys get...
Yeah, go ahead.
Out here? Hey, I got a couple of questions for you. Number one, I'm assuming we're doing all this bison transplant for at some point we want to be able to harvest them in the future. And what is your projection for the herds that you've recently introduced for when you will have a I'm assuming, permittable, huntable population. Are you looking at decades or 6 years or 26 years, or do you have any idea at this point?
Thank you for your question. To answer it, yes, obviously, well, not obviously, but hunting is definitely a portion of the reason why fishing game.
Right.
That is certainly something we're hoping to have someday with these efforts that we're doing. Then is a big question, and it's hard to predict exactly how well a population will do. We don't want to overpromise anything. So what I would say for when is that this should be viewed as a long-term project and something that we can give as a gift to future generations. Now, it might not be in our lifetimes that we're enjoying all the benefits of this, especially, you know, if we start with 15, 30 bison. To get that to a population of 200, if that's at the target, for example, it might take a long time.
Right.
Not for decades. But we should be viewing this as a long-term endeavor that is going to benefit our children and their children. We are the ones that get the opportunity to say. Hopefully we get an opportunity to enjoy it.
All right, a couple other things I would like to ask. Number one, I'm assuming you're turning them loose on state lands, mostly. I know they're going to go wherever the heck they want, but you're turning them loose on state lands primarily, or is that a false assumption on my part?
The area that we are looking at as possible restoration is primarily state land, so that's a reasonable assumption, but as I mentioned before, there might be the possibility that other groups like native corporations want to help play a role and release bison on their land. Just as an example, it might not be the case, maybe they don't, but it's not certain that they'll be released on state land. That is a reasonable assumption that they.
Well, and that's where I have a big concern is, you know, we're supposed to all be in this together, but the way that the indigenous people and the feds are checkerboarding the state to preclude people from accessing the resource. I look at that Copper River herd down there. Now, where they hang out, you can't even go hunt them. So if you draw a tag, it's a waste of your tag because OTNA doesn't let people down there to hunt them anymore. So that resource is going wasted. So I hate to see us spend a tub of money introducing bison, our money, state's money, hunters and trappers and fishermen's money, and then when it becomes a huntable resource, if they're hanging out in the wrong part of the world, sorry, you can't hunt them. You see the catch 22 that we're in right now with the way things are going? That herd in the lower Copper River is not even being hunted anymore. You can't access it unless you find them on a small sliver of land that isn't OTNA land. So that's a concern I have. I hate to spend a bunch of money for a resource and then not be able to utilize it in the future.
Your concern, I appreciate you sharing it. I've heard that concern from other groups too, like Article of International. And what I can say about that for the Lower Tana River area is just repeat again that it's primarily state land. There's very little federal land. I would even say.
Right.
Native corporation land is also pretty limited. Point that it's the vast majority of state land. So, with that in mind, I don't believe that, as I can see, the tools right now for any allocation to take away the opportunity for any Alaskan to hunt. Doesn't seem to be an avenue to
don't flood
yourself from being able to hunt this resource.
All right, thank you.
All right, any other questions for gun here. When can we maybe expect another update on the status of this? We'll discuss more about trying to get somebody there. Hopefully you guys can hold some on hands.
We're taking that as a feedback, and we can try to make that work for the future to help people. As far as timing moving forward here, we have this meeting next week in Hope, and then another meeting in Yukon Flats after that. So we're going to take some time to get those kind of hammered out through March. And then in April, depending on how these other meetings go, if we're trying to do full-on steps going through the Lower Tanana, we would probably start with visits to communities and other organizations at that time. Summertime, everyone's out hunting and fishing, so it'd be unlikely to get anything started, in my mind, until next fall, maybe October or November. So, would you be willing to do summertime or anything like that? Just, I guess maybe an informal survey of what time would you like if we were to have another plane. What would be the ideal?
I can't speak for everybody, but I can say that typically we do, our committee takes this one. Not a lot of activity, board activity. I don't think we do meet. Captain News Team.
And everybody probably won't get another official meeting going until the fall time after In the meantime, though, I'll pass some of these out now. The information cards, if you guys have Facebook or want to see our information on the Fish and Game website, there's annual updates on our herd that we have. There's videos. There's management plans if you want to see an example of what it looks like for the Anoko.
They're at large.
There's some at large right now.
Come here.
Yep, you can come there anytime. Huh? If you wanted, you could even join me for feeding them one time.
Aww.
My contact information is on there, and you're welcome to reach out to me if you're in Fairbanks and want to.
Are they friendly?
I mean, they're not not like a petting zoo. They're not going to come up to you and love a pet here, but they, charismatic
kind of want to go into the muskox. I've been up there petting muskox.
I have no idea that. They're,
yeah, cool.
They're only a year and a half old, so not even that, fat pig or like,
friend out of Oregon that raised bison.
Oh, cool.
And had a farm and he had a small herd. And he kept telling his wife, and went in the pen and she got gored 15 times. That's pretty bad. Didn't kill her or anything, but bison will be bison. They're wild animals, even farm raised. So,
you know,
and where you wouldn't want to go in there and try to scratch one on the nose.
No, they look like they'd be gentle, but they, and I mean, they are, they're docile creatures, really. Like, you have to really corner them to get them worked up to want to defend themselves. I think. Compared to a moose, I would be much less scared of seeing a bison out in the wilderness. But like any animal, you corner them or agitate them enough, they'll defend you.
Yeah, that reminds me of a question I had. Do you think would win in the fight between them?
Yeah.
Do you want a real answer to that?
Yeah.
I guess I would put my money on the bison and hope that he would gore with the horns or at least could like stomp him. I don't see it losing that much.
Yeah,
I don't know. Could be wrong, though. I've never seen it happen, so.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking.
Thank you. That was great. Well done.
Well, I helped the Hollenbecks and the Plagermans down in Delta handle domestic ones, and about as much fun to play with as a grizzly bear. They're pretty, and those are domestic ones. I haven't seen any friendly ones yet. I've been around several hundred of them. I wouldn't want to get in a pen with them, which is hilarious. I see them dent guardrail pissed off, so be formidable creature.
Great. Well, we got still some time here. Winning proposals to kind of mash move on and I have those that must be a break here to stand up. There is one. I'll see you in the look. Let's go. Sure. All right. Well. I believe the last Alex can read, but I think we kind of left off on sort of well, we'll open it up for anyone that wants to open it up for discussion.
Focus.
But I did want to ask about that. I think Tony's on the line with us. Tony, there with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Hey, maybe you can fill us in a little bit on this. I know this is an agenda change request that came up. Your kind of status on it, but there was a proposal, I think, generated by one of the board members about closing the sheep hunt for 5 years. Have you heard any updates on that? Did that get approved or go through for discussion, or where we stand on that one?
It will be discussed at that March meeting, that proposal will. I have not seen the department's A&R, the recommendations on it. When you get that type of proposal put in by the board, those are often written by people way higher than me. My guess is the department will be neutral on that, with some comments about full curl strategy being an acceptable management tool, but I'm not sure how the department will come out in the end with the politics.
Yeah, for sure. Well, kind of one of my thoughts on it too was that if they do go through with it, it will kind of contradict a lot of the things that have been said put in place by the board, full parole managers.
I can promise you, if that passes, The next step will be every piece of federal land will be closed to sheep hunting within a year. Because that's just, the federal subsistence board has shown their will in the closed areas. They close that section of the Brooks Range. If the Board of Game does that in a portion of the state of Alaska, I suspect the Federal Subsistence Board will close the whole, all federal lands to sheep hunting. And it's going to be an avalanche effect.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the answer is for the, what's been going on with the, I mean, the Western caribou areas and, like you said, the Dalton area, all that, seems like they're kind of the right word for it. I think they're feeding the fish business, I feel like, personally. Is there anything that you see from Oshoni to kind of rebuttal that from the state side of things?
Well, I would just suggest that you guys as the AC make sure you comment on that proposal and put your two cents in, and I'd be pretty thorough in your comments.
opportunity.
And I haven't looked too much at the statistics on this one, but I have notes on this from our last meeting. Yeah, so basically what they're asking for here is that if there's any non-resident tags, what do you have to utilize? Those tags go to a separate pool, I think. Basically, read it as that. Five per day. At hunt, as a residence. It's the claim here that there is non-used tags every year. But yeah, I don't see the harm if the partner has come up with a number of bears for that area. They factor that in instead of the tags on the way to go.
Happens a lot of times. The resident got fined for it. What comes up is real assets. They can go back in and say, yeah. They're the only person, as well on the federal land, because they're the only person that can bring. Just because it shows zero on the supplement.
Yeah. I think that's what the one this proposal before kind of was supposed to address. But this one was brought up. Quite a bit of discussion around this other one. So what you're saying is basically if this did go through away. Now that tag is affecting the guy, which would also basically resolve the issue that's being addressed.
I don't know, this is what I've seen in the past, in the most specific area.
Hello.
Two? Why'd you buy two? All right, I'll be right down. I'll see you in a minute, bye.
Yeah, I remember that was a big discussion, you know, with respect to guys from Philly at their talking about FDA and of course it's a but I do, yeah, I mean I do think that they should be. Are you having thoughts on this one?
Which one, 78 or 79?
I'm sorry, 79. Kind of talking about both of them a little bit, but...
Just so the 79 address 78 and not... That's a whole lot of time to... kind of come up and just make the next point.
Of course.
I'm curious to know how much reliance there is on the new fault and like how many easy puns I think is it here? Is it ever talking like five?
I want to look at when the recognized health initiative was tracking.
Chairman, you said it was six every year come up zero, and they end up getting filled.
I don't know if we're close to that. I don't know if it's a new relegation.
Are you sure? For sure.
I think it's basically apply for it. A lot of times applied for the area that they're I can basically fill in the tag.
So I think it's a small number that comes from track on if you only first as you take the first time that hunt just start to take control.
So if you draw the tag, your guide is already predetermined. How that works?
Yeah, if you're not there.
So that's like I got here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they're allocated for some.
Who were the outfitters would be owners yesterday? Would you say like the business
of the residents of the state?
I know that there's, that was in the front, I think there's one of the guys. Possibly going to get. Another one is that, you know, I every single year basically tag on Kodiak Islands where a non resident can. Right, and I was to go hunt.
30 years for a specific thing, but yeah, I never got it. Hunters have come up and hunted it in the same area in multiple years. His thing, the reason he's going to stay is because their allocation. Because he's not guaranteed a tag. A resident, whereas if you get the drawing process to the isolate and get for going with that in the near.
I'll word that, I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, this kind of addresses.
Yeah, I don't think, though, that they should be going to the following regulatory year. If you as the guy are out there and you have those tags in hand, he doesn't show up, and I don't show up, and you end up with tags, you should immediately become available to game desk and code whatever that they should know. And out there, people watch that stuff all the time. And the first guy to pay for the doggone thing gets to go that year. But you shouldn't reduce what the guy can make the next year, because the next year, all these guys might want to go, and only two or three are going to get to.
I don't think that this year is 79
months. Yeah, it says the tags will be placed into a corresponding, the numbers are, resident application for the following year. Should be unfair in the other direction.
Under subscribed times, every year they have that under subscribed hunt drawing, or it takes kind of a why shouldn't these tags just go right into that pool?
Well, I guess they do, but I guess that pool for that. It's on, basically, because people aren't applying for them because people have a tag within going.
Yeah,
should it be more
extent? Well, yeah, but like Leroy was saying, it should go right into that.
Unless immediately available to us, whoever it is.
Yeah, thank
you. Not going into the next year.
I think it should go like correct. Yeah, for the same year. Right. So if you apply for it that year.
Yeah, and I guess that's even a possibility too, if there would be. You all can draw the permits in that area, and then whatever the next two people were that come out in the draw, they get to go up. You know, they can't go, the next guy, and the next guy. Down the pool. There, maybe somebody will take it.
That's where anybody else did this.
I also don't really like the logic behind it, where it's like, okay, well, this bear didn't get killed this year, so that means we throw it into that pool, but that makes great sense.
There's a big time pool fixed over.
Which backdoor meetings? There's meetings going down. I'll take care of the dust. I'm actually not.
What happened to you?
sense that people were going to have 100% chance to not pay for one person from a developer. If you said we're 2024 at a ground level, you do the down payment and only get one pay. They must go. Someone has no money for it too because you are getting approved. So it looks like when you look at the ground supplement, you know it's a 100% chance for non-residents to drive. That's what we get once. So he makes an agreement on it, he's not going to apply it through. You know what I mean? So it looks, I think, worse than what it really is. I'm not for a bit, so. I think it's a great topic for me.
The whole bunch of structure on the island.
Look at the road that died and there's not got exclusive and then the numbers are more typical. People play for
sure. Yeah, I think this little discussion in the spring of 78, I think it's pretty much the same. I will find it. It's only 5 or 6 years. Office, you know. The revenue of the state is only 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, so it's only like, 6 months. That was the argument that the guy said on there. Was like, well, it's not even going to make a big difference.
No, the resident says he didn't apply for 100 and came with the money to get to you again. That's just for that. He's made it possible.
Yeah.
I did.
So to speak, I think that I don't care either one of these the way they're written. I'm perfectly honest about it. And to try to change them is just going to be poking the bear because politics there, this ain't happening. I don't believe that it's right the way it is, but it just isn't going to change it.
Anyway, 30 minutes proposals. Tony, do you have any specific proposals that you have to look at?
Nope, I sure don't. I don't have anything, Alan.
All right, yeah.
You guys already voted on the antlerless proposals. That was the only ones I was concerned about.
Yes, one of these interest me very much, but none of them are closer to what I'm going to use.
Why is that?
Backtracking just a little bit here, does there need to be any kind of formal budget committee to be leading in support of the Bison project, or just not at all?
What?
it seemed like it was a fairly thorough group here, but I mean, does there need to be officially say yes, we support this and then not again? Do you like that from us? Or do you need a
certainly wouldn't say no something like that. You just have some groups like things that basically have what interest in want to learn more about the project, and some groups say letters to the governor that they want to have bison in the area. So if you guys have a group that you'd like to do something like that, certainly be welcome to receiving something like that. Any support in a formal way is always good.
That's all the groups, all the groups. As you may.
Well, the, as far as I'm concerned, that Wood Bison project has my full support.
Where I am with it, I just wanted to make sure that it was documented, that that's the way the whole board feels, you know. I mean, yeah, it seems like it's a pretty pro crowd, but beneficial. I think it could hurt. Come on.
Grab it over. I'll put something together and I'll send it out to you. Is on fentanyl. Go from there.
Okay. Thank you.
You able to find that?
I think I can find it.
Hey, Tony, sorry to bring it up again. Is that 19C proposal for sheep, was that actually accepted as a change request?
Say your question again, Alan.
Sorry. That 19C sheet proposal, did that actually get approved as a change request?
Yes, it did. It did, and they're going to take that proposal up at the that Soldatna meeting in March.
And Tony, I can add to that. This is Kyle from Board Support. So that was actually a board-generated proposal that came out of a motion that was put forward by Board Member Hoffman during that agenda change request meeting and supplemental miscellaneous issues. So that came under the miscellaneous issues. So it wasn't submitted as an ACR. That came from Stosh Hoffman.
Okay, when do we have to comment?
So that falls right in. So that all of those additional or supplemental proposals, beginning with proposal 200, that were should have been in some packets for you there. Those will be taken up at the Soldatna meeting, probably as soon as deliberation is done on the South Central Region proposals. And the deadline is the same for both, March. Sorry about that, folks. And Coke, if you can hear us, I just muted you. We had some background noise coming in. But yeah, the common deadline for all of these board of game proposals you're looking at will be March 3rd.
I don't want to keep us here. I do think that we kind of started diving this a little bit more. I just got the message again today, but we should probably at least put one more put together some proposals in the region. As a board, if there's anything real strongly about it, last time spoke quite a bit about some potential hunts in our area for entering this stuff as well as I feel. Looks a lot stronger. Make sure we go to our next meeting before March 3rd, but I'll give everybody time to look at that 19 and see also a little bit more. A little bit of time maybe to put together a few proposals, give everybody some time to think. That works for everybody.
Hey, if I may, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Board generated proposals. I don't believe are even constitutional. I know no one cares about the Constitution anymore, but also precluding people from the resource instead of sustaining and multiplying and helping the resource to flourish. I think is a terrible path to go down. And whenever you guys start talking about allocation, we ain't in this, we're not all in this together anymore. Everyone's worried about their piece of the pie. Why don't we grow a hell of a lot more pie instead of worrying about that I'm going to get mine and you're not going to get yours? That's what I was referencing a while ago. I hate to spend a bunch of money putting bison in just so the wolves and the other predators can chew on one once in a while. I don't want to spend a bunch of money. I'd rather spend the money regrowing our depleted sheep resource through any and all means. And and the board generated proposal is not a good thing. It's not a good way to go. And I would say we shouldn't support it because, like I said, that you can't preclude people from the resource. The resource belongs to we the people. And I'll reference the Constitution again, both the state one and the other one that the politicians don't give a shit about. So there you have it from me. I'd say no support for the bison or for the sheep closure.
Up on 8 here. Yeah, I'll go ahead and recommend maybe doing the next meeting. Do the 28th, we'll have enough time to put the emails together and get them submitted in. That work for everybody, the 28th. That's the very end of the month. Today.
I'll be on leave, but that's fine. I'll probably have another regional coordinator kind of set up the Zoom host, probably like the South Central coordinator, and I'll either work with some of the staff, see if anyone's going to be going down in person, or see if any of the AC members will be coming through town the week prior. I'll leave a meeting package for everyone.
All right. Sounds good. Well, the 28th works for everybody. Where do we want to meet? And right here again. Is this prepared for all for everybody? We haven't had one out here in Anderson area. Anderson.
Maybe by next winter we'll have the clubhouse ready enough to have a meeting.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, well, let's plan for that and then plan to meet back here on the
6 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and really kind of start making a new proposal. Still have more time to look over any proposals in case. Most wants to bring up. We'll try to
try to spend a portion of that meeting on some proposals for junior. I'm good. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming down again, and also all the advice. And that was excellent. I appreciate you. Thank you. I'll work on getting work drafted up and get it out there, but we'll get.
I suggest one of the things that we can usually be to assign being correspondent for future meetings. Representative from the AG that I can work with in the future, upcoming meetings. That's something that I'm
okay, and we'll put that on our next meeting as well. All right, with that, I'll make a motion that we end the meeting.
Second.
The one vote for the night. Favor? All right. Everybody. Hey, thanks, everybody online.